Hello and welcome to Crowbar Kernel Panic, your favorite tech, gaming, and Linux podcast. Trying a new tagline there. What did you think about that?
Did it sound good?
Yeah. This episode was pre-recorded, but will be released on YouTube, iTunes, and podcast platforms. Please like, rate, review, comment, subscribe on whichever platform you prefer to listen or view the show. By the way, share the episodes. Tell your friends about the podcast. I've been trying more Google ad things.
Yeah.
And I did another test of the Google ads. This time I paid less money. So last time
and you got better results
time,
now.
Yeah, this time I did half of what I paid last time and we got a ton of views. I think our last episode has like over 2,000 views, although I haven't looked at the retention rate, but I'm sure it's like last time where the retention rate it's about 3 seconds. You know, people just watch it and then they realize that we're not Linus Tech Tips and they leave. And we had a few subscribers, but only like two or three. But they look like real people instead of last time. It was very suspicious accounts that were subscribing.
It must be that Google AI, that Gemini. That's screwing us up, man.
It's not like we're going to some, you know, we're not going to Fiverr and paying somebody to give us views. We're going to Google and we're buying advertising space, like
we're
legitimately.
Saying, please take our money and give us more views.
But I think that the results are the same. I think whether you go to like one of these sketchy websites and pay $5 or you go directly to YouTube and pay $20. It seems like the results are the same. Either way, it doesn't feel like real people.
You're probably better off paying some guy off the street and saying, hey, spread the word.
I think that's what I was going to get to is I think the real thing is that you should do neither of those two things. We should just word of mouth. I just hope that people talk about the show. If you enjoy listening to the show, tell some friends about it. Tell them to tune in. If you have a tech job, you're around other nerds all day, just tell them they need to listen to the podcast. If they're into Linux and tech and gaming and PC hardware in general. Yeah. We're a good place for that kind
exactly.
of stuff. So, but this week, we do have a little bit of Linux news. We also have some home lab discussion. I want to talk about cloud init, cloud initialization in Proxmox. And we also have some not home lab, but PC, some gamer PC setup over here. Is it a gaming PC?
It is.
Yeah, you put a 1650 in it.
My old one.
And then we have some game reviews at the end. I played Silent Hill, A Short Message, which is not a PC game, but I played it. A lot of people are talking about it. And I love Silent Hill. And when Silent Hill does come out on PC, the Silent Hill 2 remake, I'm going to talk about it for a few episodes. So this is just in preparation for that. I'm just getting you ready for whenever that era of the show finally arrives. Yeah, it's been a busy week. I know that last episode we kind of joked about how like we work all the time, but the last 2 weeks was no... We definitely lived up to that. There was no difference there. But you built a PC this weekend.
Yep.
All weekend, when I've messaged you, you've been busy putting stuff together.
Yeah. Wait, and, hold on. Let me just clarify something. Were we supposed to record on Friday?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
but I totally forgot. Like, that didn't even cross my mind on Friday. And when you messaged me the other day, I was just like... Oh yeah.
neither one of us. It wasn't just you. Neither one of us. I also didn't message you. I was thinking secretly. I was thinking, I wonder if Josh is busy and not really into doing the show tonight. I'll just see if he messages me, and then you on the other end, you had forgotten all about it, so it was all right. I was in a drawing trance. I can talk about this.
I remember you said something to me about a drawing trance.
Yeah. So this is game dev related because I'll tell you what I'm doing. I can't do three. I'm not a 3D artist. And so for the game that I'm trying to make in Unity. Okay, guys, I want to go ahead and put it out there right now that you could call me a sellout because I didn't quit using Unity. I actually did do a lot in Godot, but I had just already done so much in Unity, and I didn't want to start a new project, so I'm working.
No one's going to play that lock-in. I know.
No one's going to play my game. No one's going to play my game. It's never going to come out, so what does it matter? But I can't do 3D models, but I am good at digital art. I say good. I'm not great, but I'm good at it. So I found a model that I liked for my main character. It was a generic enough model, and I added a few like small items to it. And then now I'm making the digital art for the game, like sort of what might be cover art or concept art. But I'm working in reverse because I'm basing it off of the model that somebody else made, and I'm just kind of elaborating on it into this
You mean you didn't use AI to create all your artwork? Come on, man.
Oh, yeah, I know. I know. I tried the AI thing in Godot. So I was setting up a first-person FPS controller, and I tried to use ChatGPT to basically just code it for me. I asked ChatGPT, I said, in GD language for Godot 3, can you write me code that'll give me a controller?
Oh, I bet that was a mess.
Dude, it spit out code that looked like it was going to work. And then I copy and pasted it in there.
Looked like.
Yeah, I copy and pasted it in there, and it was like, it didn't work, and it was like looking for things. And so I thought, oh, well, it's just the variables don't match because ChatGPT doesn't know what my objects are called. So I started trying to correct things, and by the end of it, I should just never went to ChatGPT. It was like, you know, I plagiarized what they gave me. I had to change everything. It was unplagiarized because I had to change so much to get it to work. But yeah, so that's some experimenting that I've done this week in some game development. So, your wife's PC. What need is this filling? Is this a gaming PC, school PC, work PC?
So yeah,
why are y'all building a new PC?
This is a gaming PC, and I'd say probably about like 95% of the reason why we did it is because I already had the GPU and the CPU, so that saved me like $400 or $500 right there. And I'm like, you know what? We'll just buy the rest of the parts, and the rest of the parts were like nothing comparatively speaking. So we just got it all together.
I should have known when I saw the 1650 Super. Yep. I should have known. This is a hand-me-down second build PC here. This is about the right timing.
It is an upgrade from her laptop. So that was my goal, is to have something better than the laptop. We toyed around with getting a new graphics card, and I was going to go with a 7600, a Radeon. Yeah. But that was like almost $300. So I was like, we'll try this, see how this goes. And then if this really works out, we can upgrade, you know, next month or a couple months down the road, whatever.
Well, you know, you can always do the, I can't get my finger in the right place. You can always do the arc there.
Oh, the arc.
I think the pricing on it is changed though because of availability.
Yeah.
I don't know what they cost now, but I saw at one point they were like more expensive than we bought them at, and
yeah, they're it's weird right now, and like you can't find the 16 gigabyte one. Not that you need that, but like,
oh, I would want that does to make get a big difference
because that's
though.
Like future proofing pretty good, like
the Signature series. Yeah, that's what I have. And that's what you got too, right?
Yep, we bought them at the same time. I got the limited edition. Yeah. Yep. For that
reason. So I was going to say, you can always upgrade the graphics card you know, later on in the future. And you're already getting way more husband points than me because I took my spare PC and put Proxmox on it. Didn't even offer it up as a as an option to build anything up for my wife.
I mean, I was going to upgrade my like lead server, quote unquote, because it has most of my stuff on it. With those parts, but I was like, you know what, my server's fine. I don't need that kind of power for it. It's really don't need it. So I said, you know what, we're gonna build another PC for her and see how that goes. And so far, so good. I mean, we have everything exactly. Well, shouldn't say exactly, but close enough to the same as her laptop. Because basically, I just copy and pasted what I could with games and whatnot. No, so we got all that set up, and this is like the first build I've ever done that's like, I guess you could say, an aesthetic build, because we kind of, I mean, other than the internals, because I went kind of, I didn't go cheap, but I went like cheaper, because if I would have spent the money, I could have got all white parts inside, because she got a white case and all that, and but it's got RGB, so the white looks really good with that, and it kind of like meshes well with the black on the inside of the motherboard and
Did you post pictures on Discord? You need to post some pictures.
You know what? I think Lauren actually did send me.
And I saw that you got the white Lian Li case, which we talked about a little bit before the show. But you see, so this is your first Lian Li.
Yes.
So this is your first experience. And they make them more budget friendly now than they used to. And I think even the one you got is on their, like, I don't know if they have a separate brand or whatever, but I think it's on their budget end. And you said it's one of the cheapest PCs you could find.
Yeah, the cases.
And cases, yeah. And it looks beautiful. How does it feel in person? How do you feel about the case?
I think it's solid. I mean, I love this thing. I'm actually kind of sold on Lian Li's right now because, like, it's solid, man. Even the glass isn't just glass. It's like glass with metal around it. So the whole side slides off like a normal side. Like
it's not just glass. To share my screen.
I'm getting some pictures here, but
so I'm showing the case that you got here. So
yeah,
this is the Lian Li micro ATX case. This is a micro build. Oh man,
it was the smallest one I could find that wasn't like constricting in size. You know what I mean?
One thing I always remember about Lian Li cases when I had one was like the metal quality. Just feels like super thick.
Oh yeah. Now, the sides are like heavy. They're not like a typical, you know, where you can flex it. If you flex it back and forth, it's not like that at all. It's solid.
I don't know about this particular case, but cases I've had by them in the past have been really, you can take them like almost completely apart. Like they have so many pieces that come off.
Oh yeah. I couldn't figure out how to get the front off, even though you're supposed to be able to take the front panel off, but I haven't figured that out yet. And I'm sure it's easy. I just didn't do it. I did post some pictures here, to your Discord.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I'll pull those up there. Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah. I was about to ask you what motherboards you got. Let me see. How can I share this? If I share this, is there anything incriminating?
I don't think so.
So I'll share this and see how it goes.
Just pay no attention to the razor that's on the the desk of the one photo.
So the here's some pictures of the case. So here's the it put together with the graphics card.
Yeah, we have the side you could see that sticker there. That's the actual film that's still on the glass. I never took it off yet.
You still haven't taken it off?
No, still haven't taken it off.
Oh my gosh, we could make it we could film a little clip of it and edit it in here because people love the satisfaction of peeling that off. Now, is this all these are, I was trying to see if they were just a portrait or if it was because
it's
of my window.
It's portrait. Yeah. No, it's portrait, unfortunately.
So this Tough Gaming, this looks like my motherboard. I have a Tough Gaming. It's probably not the same model, but
it was
Tough Gaming
for the features. It was the best price, and actually, I got it for another $15 off because they had a coupon. So it was like dirt cheap.
Dude, it looks cool, man. Oh, dude, yeah, you got the
like she went all out with this with the aesthetic, you know, like. The keyboard and everything. I didn't even get to talk about the keyboard yet.
That is wild. The keyboard matches the placemat. Then the
only
little
thing
silicone
that doesn't match
things.
Is her mouse.
The mouse is the only thing that doesn't match. Even the 360 controller matches. Oh my gosh. Dude, you guys are Pinterest worthy.
Something like that, maybe. No, like I could have definitely spent more money on the internals and got them like all white. You know, like there's people who freaking go nuts and like they have to have all the aesthetic stuff. But of course, I don't have an endless budget, so
it matters to me to some degree. So like one reason I've never bought like any of the most recent NVIDIA cards is because I think they look atrocious.
Yeah, you're not wrong. They don't look good.
Yeah, I know, which is like crazy. I don't know. I think that's kind of crazy, but that's one of the reasons that I like the Intel Arc whenever we started looking into it was because oh, it's a future-proof card that doesn't look like I have a toaster in my case.
Exactly,
right?
Yeah. That's one thing I can say. I love the look of the Ark. The Ark just looks, I don't know, they just did that extra.
It's just classic looking, man. It's just, it is subtle, you know, it's subtle, it's classic looking. So it's automatic classic. All right, so you got the Ryzen 2600.
That's my old CPU.
Okay, so did you have to get a new motherboard that would match the CPU, or this is also your old motherboard?
So what I tried to do is I tried to get a motherboard that was kind of future-proof, so I could upgrade the CPU and, you know, to a point. I think it can go up to the 5000 series AMD. So that would be a huge upgrade in the future if I wanted to do that.
Yeah. And did you have to get new RAM, or is it using your old RAM?
So I got new RAM. The problem I had...
RGB RAM! Yeah, oh, my
RGB,
goodness!
RGB, man. You got to get all the RGB, especially with a white case. You can't live it boring. What's wrong with you?
Yeah, that's hilarious.
No.
That's hilarious.
So I'm kind of mad at myself because I thought I bought the 3200 megatransfers a second RAM, but I got the 3600, and my CPU does not support 3600.
So it clocks down there, right?
This is the problem. It clocks down to like 2100.
Oh, that's weird.
There is no 3200 setting, so now I have to return that RAM and get the 3200 RAM.
Oh, wow.
Because I can't live with that. I can't live with it being a... Even though, I guarantee you, there's zero performance increase. But that lost performance is just too much to bear for me.
I'm nodding because I would be the same way. Yeah, exactly.
And plus, I can just return it and it'll be fine. I have all the boxes and whatnot. I can just return it. So.
Yeah. No, this is rad. You remember whenever we first started the Discord, I remember one of my first posts on Discord was that I was having to go out and get new RAM.
Yeah.
And
the snowball.
All they had was the RGB. And I was like, I just refuse to get RGB RAM. I cut it off at RAM. I'll do my graphics card can have RGB fans. I'll put RGB fans in my case. I have RGB fans in my case now, but I was like, my RAM doesn't need RGB. I don't want it. I want it to do RAM things and not light things.
I'm in the same boat as you, but there was so little RGB in this case that I needed something else, and it was more money to get the RGB, so I figured, what the heck, I'll just get it.
No, I love it. I think, and that's another thing too, is I think my wife's case will probably, she'd probably want all the RGB she could get. And new keyboard too. So yeah. I ordered a new keyboard too. We're like keyboard guys now. I don't know how it happened. We talked about it on one podcast, and like now I'm like watching keyboard videos. I took my keycaps off. I've had this keyboard for like over a year, which by the way, I never did post the picture in the last episode. I said that our keyboards look suspiciously similar.
Yes.
The it's just the best. We just have good taste. It's
exactly,
the best color scheme.
Exactly.
Yeah, I took this thing apart and cleaned it, and I actually took the keycaps off and cleaned everything and then put it back together. So in a way I could say I finally built a keyboard because I took this one all the way apart and put it back together.
Hey,
again.
That counts for me.
But I ordered a keyboard. So my problem was I wasn't using this keyboard on my main PC because I was using it on my work PC.
Ah.
And when I separated the two, I divorced the two, right? I had to uncouple them. I used to actually work on my same setup, but it got to be too distracting. It's too distracting to have a drawing tablet here, game controller, and then I'm trying to work, you know, so I had to separate the two. Well, this one got dedicated to work, but I really wanted to use it all the time. I really want this to be my main keyboard. Mm. And so I ordered a new work keyboard. And it's been almost 2 weeks. I ordered it right after the last episode.
Oh, man. And it's still not here.
And yeah, it came from China because I ordered it directly from the company. So it's a Newfi. It's a Newfi keyboard, the Newfi Air 75. Or no, I got the 96 because I wanted the number pad.
Did you get one of those like compact number pad ones?
It's like same as this one.
Oh, is that what you have one? There?
Yeah. I always do the 96% because I just can't live without the number pad.
So I really wanted to try 96%, but I just, yeah. I don't know. I just got the full keyboard. See, this is,
I just want to point out that even this discussion about 96 versus 75 versus what, the old us never would have said any of this.
What's
this
a keyboard? Is new. What are you talking about? Just give me a Dell. Just give me a Dell membrane keyboard.
We are keyboard people now. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it's from my time period as a cashier at Best Buy, but I can work that number pad, man.
Yeah.
I don't even need to. Yep. I know the number pad better than I know my home row keys. Like, I could just. So I always get the 96 because I feel like, but you know, there's people I talk to that get 75% keyboards.
Yeah.
They say they don't miss it. So, I mean, maybe it's just a thing you get used to. And then there's also, you can get a separate number pad for when you're going to be doing some sort of entry like that. But I don't know. I feel like I use it enough that I also use that little side enter all the time.
Mm.
So yeah, anything else interesting, anything interesting about the Ajaz AK820?
Yeah. It sounds amazing. Like,
what switches did she get?
They're gray switches, but I'm not sure what the exact brand of them
are. You're ruining our keyboard street cred.
I know. I'm not sure what the brand of them are because it's just random brand, man. I don't even know what I didn't pick the keyboard because switches are great. No, I just we just kind of looked at a couple of videos and we're like, that sounds good. That looks good. Whatever. We'll try it out.
Yeah.
And holy crap, man, this thing is nice.
Really?
It is a really nice keyboard.
I don't know gray switches. So are they clicky or
they're not linear,
not
but they're light.
Okay.
I'm thinking, yeah, they're light on the press. Like, they're very light to touch. So they're super quiet. Like, you're talking like barely audible when you're right next to it.
What do you use red? What do you use?
I use reds, yeah. Straight red linears. Yep. Yeah.
Me too. So how do they they're lighter than yours?
Yes, they're slightly. Well, I think they're a little bit lighter, but they also have a shorter actuation. So, like, when you're pressing down, the key activates quicker than mine would. So, I don't know. They're just, they're really nice. I actually like typing on it.
Yeah. I'm on my third keyboard, red switches, and I just don't, want to get used to anything else. To me, and I don't want to ruin my keyboard cred here, but I'm not as particular. I can get used to anything. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
It's just once I don't want like something at work and then something at home. I don't want them to be different. You know what I mean?
I agree.
But I could live with anything. It's just once I pick something, I just want to stick with that.
You know? Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I get you there. Yeah. And the cool thing about this keyboard, just quick, there's a little screen on it, and you can do like all sorts of stuff with that little screen. You can actually put even like GIFs on that little screen and like have them just displayed there.
Dude, that's crazy. That's cool that y'all have so are y'all playing like ESO now? Like, what's the game you're gonna play together?
I have no idea yet.
Yeah, if I built my wife a computer, which I have in the past, and she just rarely used it, but it was like, you know, she plays The Sims and I'm playing World of Warcraft.
Well, yeah, that's probably what's going to end up happening. She'll either play Skyrim or Sims, and I'll be playing my dinosaur game.
Yeah. I guess I got too excited about building the PC. We didn't do the news.
Nah, that's all right.
Yeah, it's all right. So
we
have a few news items. We have Linux finally exceeds more than 4% of the market share. And this is as Mac OS is on a downcline.
I know.
I wouldn't call it a severe downcline, but they'd been on a steady, pretty much straight line for, let's see, this goes back. Oh, this is only going back a year. But they've been on the decline for the last several months. So, yeah. And then the increase, you know, we could say there was a huge increase back in March of last year and compared to, you know, now February of this year. What happened in March of last year? That wasn't the Steam Deck. What could that have been? That would have just been a huge spike back in March of last year.
I don't know.
But you got to figure that the overall progress made in Linux market share has been Steam Decks. I mean, yeah. I would like to see a breakdown of how much of this is Steam Decks compared to...
That would be awesome. Like, that'd be a very interesting statistic to see.
I also think that just, you know, I also feel like Windows is shifting away from the PC gaming market. Not in a big way. Obviously, there's companies that are going to make games for PC, and you know, but it just doesn't seem like Microsoft in general is like has a focus there. I think they're really focused on developers. Like,
yes.
Microsoft seems to be heading Windows subsystem for Linux is getting more and more support, and I just think they're really heading in that direction. You and I, working in the tech industry as sysadmins and computer science, we may have a skewed view on that, so I might be off base. But my view is most people I know that are like big Microsoft advocates are some sort of developer.
If they're actually advocating for them, not just like, oh, I use Windows.
Not just like your grandmother uses
it.
Right,
she
just bought a computer and it came with Windows. But yeah. And I think that there's a shift somewhat because of the Steam Deck, but even across non-Steam Decks, mm-hmm. I think there's a shift in the gaming community more towards Linux because it's just becoming so convenient. It's becoming so easy now that there's almost no... You know, there's almost no purpose for this podcast in the way there was when we started it.
Right.
Because, you know, we talk about this all the time, but originally the idea behind this podcast was each episode we were going to talk about how to get some game to work on.
Yeah,
on
that was the
Linux.
Original vision.
And now there's no purpose in that because
you just download a game and
you just download it and play it. There's nothing else you have to do. So I think that just as that, but you know, public opinion has not really been that.
No.
Even though we've known that as people that actually use Linux, the public opinion, I think, is starting to come around because of the Steam Deck. People are starting to realize that, like, oh, I can play like 90% of my game library on Steam. Why couldn't I do that on Ubuntu on my desktop, you know?
Yeah, and I feel like if... I know this will never happen, but if Valve came out with a dedicated PC, you know, that they... dubbed as like a Steam Deck PC. I don't know what you would name it. I don't know. I'm not sure. But I guarantee you people, now that they know the Steam Deck is good, they would buy that because if they knew about the Steam Deck, because they know it's good.
Oh, yeah. Like, so what you're saying is if the... what was the Steam Box. If the Steam Box came out today...
Steam OS, Steam Boxes, Steam Machines. Yeah. Steam Machines.
Steam Machines. Yes. Yeah. Oh yeah, certainly. That was they were so far ahead of their time. Like that was way too early to release that. If that came out today, it would be a huge.
Yeah, if this would have been in reverse, it would have definitely been more popular.
The only thing about it is, I think the reception of it would be a little less. I think the reception of it would be a little different because the reason why the Steam Deck is so successful is because the hardware works with that size screen. Whereas if people are using a Steam Box and they're hooking it up to their big screen TV, trying to get the highest resolution, there would be varying degrees of supportability there.
I agree. Except for what I mean is Steam builds a box themselves and sells it.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking.
Yeah, me too.
Okay. Oh, you're just saying I want to hook it up
to my
8K TV.
Right, yeah, right, exactly.
I got you.
Like the Steam Deck is one device that encompasses
with
screen,
everything.
Piece. Yeah, there's no unknown part of the.
There's people hooking the Steam Decks up to their TVs, and you can see and you can see that they are getting worse performance because most TVs are 4K, and they're like, well, why isn't this thing working? Well, because it's not designed for that resolution. It's not even designed for 1080p. You know, so like I do agree with what you're saying, but like, it would definitely have to be a pretty beefy machine to have people not be like, well, this is crap, you know, because it won't work on my 4K TV, blah, blah, blah.
So they would just have to put more. They would just have to have a greater performance than what the Steam Deck has so that it could at least do.
And they could get it with an AMD graphics card. They could do a pretty powerful graphics card in there. Because I would stick with AMD at this point because they're all AMD on that side. So why change the formula?
Fedora Workstation 41 to no longer install GNOME X.org. So it's no longer going to have X11.
X has been X'd.
Been X'd. Been X'd, baby. So, yeah, today, if you download Fedora, it is not the default option, but it is installed if you feel like you need it. And starting with Fedora 41, they are going to just not install it at all.
Yep.
You can always install it. There's nothing stopping you.
Of course.
But it won't come with it. And...
And I've just,
I think it's progress.
Yeah, it's definitely progress. And the thing for me is I have not felt the need to install or to run X at all since I'd say at least 38, Fedora 38, whenever they set it to the default, Wayland being the default, I haven't felt the need to ever switch.
Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree. I was scared of the switch, and then it was just like one day it happened.
And it just worked.
And it just worked.
There was a couple of hiccups in the very beginning, but Fedora didn't jump the gun on that one. They didn't just say, okay, this is going to work. I don't care if it's working or not. This is going to happen. No, they didn't do that. They waited until it was stable enough that they're like, okay, this is going to work now, so we're gonna set it as default. And it did.
The only thing, and this is not really a Wayland thing as much as it is an Intel driver thing, but the only thing that I struggle with these days is screen capture and window capture over Wayland, specifically with my Intel card. I don't think it was an issue with the NVIDIA card.
Oh, okay. Yeah, and there's always going to be those edge case bugs that haven't gotten fixed yet, you know.
And yeah, that's... That's so I have Windows on a spare drive now because it's just I want to capture some gameplay footage, and it is just like so is night and day different using. And actually, you know what the thing is even OBS on Windows is not as good as using the Intel specific software that can capture in their particular codec.
Oh, okay.
They have a new AV1 codec.
And it's
available on OBS on Linux, but it don't work. It does not work the same. I've seen both side by side. It doesn't work the same. And so maybe that, you know, if somebody out there is just like an expert on getting this working, if they could send me a video or some sort of instructions. I followed some guides on YouTube and I didn't have the same results. And so maybe it's more than just my card. I don't know. But on Windows, I mean, I think the codec works really well. And I would love to be able to use it on OBS on Linux, but c'est la vie. KDE Plasma. Wait, is this KDE Plasma 6?
Yeah.
KDE Plasma 6 release. Yep.
They call it the mega release, but...
Yeah, it is.
That's their sloganing for it.
I have tried KDE so many times, and I have it's just never
I
hit it with me.
I have too, until I tried KDE on Fedora. That's where I fell in love with it because they set defaults that made sense to me.
Yeah.
KDE in general, well, now they do. But before Fedora, their defaults were just garbage. I'm sorry, KDE fans and Plasma fans. But the defaults were garbage and now they're good because they were listening to Fedora, or I should say the community at a large. And they actually did implement some sane defaults now in Plasma 6.
Oh, they actually call out the new defaults here.
Yep.
Right here on the page, files and folders are now selected with a single click. Yeah, I remember. Wait a minute.
With a
single click and open with a double click. Okay, yeah. Okay, yep.
That's how that as is, it should be forever and ever and ever.
Yeah, I've joked about that many times, but it is the most absurd thing ever that they were like, you know what we're going to do? We're going to save you so much time.
We're going to be different.
We're cutting out that extra click that you put in every time you open something.
Think of how many mice we'll save.
Yeah, this is doubling the lifespan of... Your left.
That should be their slogan. Their old slogan should have been, want to double the lifespan of your mouse? Get KDE Plasma.
I promised on like some old episode, and I shouldn't even bring it up because no one remembers, but I promised that I would try KDE Plasma 6 whenever it came out. So I'll be watching for it to come out and I'll give it a shot.
Yeah, and I do have to say, I haven't actually tried 6 yet, but
yeah,
from what I've heard, it has been a great release. Like, it has been relatively bug-free, and they actually... I think they put out 2 patches now. Don't quote me, but at least one patch they put out that fixed a lot of the initial bugs that they had.
Yeah.
But, I mean, as far as the initial release, the 6.0, it seemed to be pretty solid as far as what I've been hearing.
So I don't know about this next article.
Yeah. So, so Firefox finally has caught up with the likes of Chrome and Vivaldi and Edge.
It's tab grouping.
Yeah. I mean, they may be caught up because it's the new CEO that's saying this, and I take everything with a grain of salt. You know, they may say it, but is it going to happen? But man, this is way out of date. Like, they need this feature.
I don't know that I've ever used this.
Oh, I love the tab groups, dude. Oh man.
So give me the premise. Give me the premise of tab grouping.
So for me personally, my home network, for instance, I have all of my Proxmox in a tab group. So I got the 3 servers in there. Then I have my VMs in another tab group. That every VM I have is in that. And then on top of that, there's workspaces. So I have one that's just called home network, and that has all my home networks and the tab groups all in that. So it's like this nested grouping.
How different is it than just having a folder in your favorites with those items on it?
Because they're always open.
Okay.
So
you always keep them open.
They're all tabs. So once they're loaded once, they're open. So I log into my servers and they're all loaded. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
Like if you want to go to your
So you never close these tabs?
No, pretty much never. They go to sleep once in a while, so it saves your RAM that way, but
I can't keep tabs open.
Oh,
like
dude,
that.
I have so many tabs.
Once I get more than a certain number, it starts feeling cluttered in my mind, and I have to kill them.
That's the beauty of this, because you don't get the clutter because they're grouped.
You can categorize them. Yeah. I'd have to try it, but I don't think that I'm a tabs
kind
of guy.
To each their own, but man, I couldn't live without the tab groups.
Sometimes when I work with people and I look at, they'll like share their screen to go over something, over Teams or something, and then I see they've got like 36 tabs open. And I'm like, oh my God, what are you doing? Why do you have so many tabs open?
Oh yeah, I can't
open?
Stand when my tabs go over all the way to the other side of the page. That's another story, but yeah, that's why I group them.
All right, I'll look into this. Maybe this could change my life. Who knows? I put everything in. I put everything into folders.
Yeah, I know what you're saying with bookmarks.
And then I'll right click on the folder and open all at once. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean you can do that, but then it's all on one line. You don't get the groupings of what's like if you're doing research on one thing, you can put that into a tab group and have all that research there. And
I don't know.
You can put, well, at least on Vivaldi, you can right click on the tab group and put them all to sleep at once.
Well, in any case, I'm super happy that at least your world is changing.
Yes, because that was one feature that I moved away from Firefox because it didn't have.
So the new CEO that took over Firefox, they just came in, and that's like the first. Kicking the door.
Yeah, they've been kicking the door open for a week now or something. Like maybe I'm a little outdated.
We need group tabs.
Yeah. Well, it's one of the most requested features that they have.
I'm going to turn this company around.
Hey, I'm all for anybody that wants to improve Firefox because they've neglected it for a long time.
It's been the same seemingly it's been the same for a long time. All right, that's a feature that's in high demand. Then who am I? who am I to say it seems frivolous? Yeah, I'll try it out. That'll be my next challenge to myself to get used to.
Just get the alpha version. This thing sucks. It's crashing all the time.
I had to try it on Vivaldi or something first.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Try the tab groups in general. Yeah.
I I've recently went back to using Chrome. I don't have a loyalty to any one browser. I change all the time. All right, so I got some home lab talk. You mentioned your home lab there. I'm working on a project to install Kubernetes on my home lab.
Going all out.
Last week we talked about it, and I think we discussed whether I should install K8s, so that way it's similar to, you know, something I actually might learn, right, you know, and use at work, or if I should do the K3s, which is like the smaller, lighter weight, designed, you know, for home networks, you know, kind of thing. And I decided that really what I'm learning in this experiment is all conceptual. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. The orchestration part more so than the actual technology.
Exactly. Exactly. So I went with K3s, and I found a great video series. I have a link to it here in the show notes. And let me just look at it real quick so that I can see what the guy's channel name is. It's Jim's Garage.
Oh, okay. I didn't
the channel name.
I've never
seen this guy's videos before. I was looking up stuff about Kubernetes in home lab.
Yeah. I've seen this guy before. Yeah.
And his video popped up, and I'm essentially following his home lab setup guide. He has like a playlist on his channel that's all about setting up a K3 home lab, and I'm doing exactly his guide. As a matter of fact, before I found his guide, I had made some VMs myself, mm-hmm. and I started just trying to install Kubernetes and see if I could figure out how to set up the cluster.
Okay.
I deleted those VMs, and I'm completely following his guide. And what I'm going to talk about in this episode today is actually from his first video of his guide. But what I have set up, and I was thinking I could share this. What do I need to hide on my Proxmox? Is there anything that I need to? It's like not good to show.
Just have all your passwords in the notes section of the Proxmox.
Exactly. So I'm going to share my cluster. I might blur some things out after the fact. So what I've set up so far is I have a Pi-hole, an Ansible server. Those were there before the. Before the video series, but what I've set up as part of my cluster setup is these five VMs for K3S. And it's five because what Jim's Garage recommends is three masters and two worker nodes. And so that's the way I've deployed them. So let's see. Oh, I wanted to point out that Jim's Garage video series actually might be too good for what my intention is. I'm trying to learn how to say his deployment process is basically, I'm going to go over it next week, but the deployment process for K3s is like you just run his script that he has and it does everything. And it does it so well. I did have to go back and fix something, but it does it so well that I didn't learn anything about installing Kubernetes.
It's fine. Just pipe the script to bash.
Yeah. So if anybody at work, if they're ever asking me to deploy a Kubernetes node, I'm going to have to go, hold on.
Grab a script.
Let me pull up this YouTube video. Let me go to this guy's GitHub real quick. No. essentially, he has everything like so, but he goes into detail about what he's doing.
Yeah.
So there is some concepts to learn there. And if you're somebody that's just trying to set this up and you just want to get it done the best way, then I would say his process is definitely probably the best video to follow. There's another Techno Tim has really great videos on it, and everybody knows that channel. But one key feature that was in Proxmox that I started using as part of this video series is cloud initialization. Mm.
So, I've always wanted to try this, and I've never actually got around to doing it.
That's right. So my concept on this was always like, oh, that'll be really cool to set up one day.
Yep.
But right now, I just got to get a VM built, and I got to put this on there so that I can see this process working. This was not the step. These early steps were not the steps I was excited about, so I never went and did that. You know what I mean? It's more exciting to just install a VM and then start installing Kubernetes on it. But what this does, you can build a VM and then turn that VM into a template. And if you're using a cloud ISO, something like I'm using Ubuntu Cloud,
yep.
Then you can pre-initialize certain settings that will be used every time you deploy based on this template. Then yep. it will automatically use these cloud initialization features. So, like, for example, I have a user account that I want to be on every VM that I build using this template. That user account has a set password that I'm going to use every time I build on this template. It can deploy a SSH key on every VM so that I can automatically SSH to it from my terminal without having to put in the password. And so really cool things like that. You can set up, okay, every time I deploy a VM, I want to use my pi-hole as my DNS. You can have that pre-configured here. I actually don't have that set up, but that's probably something that I will do in the future. You can set, I want to set the IP before I build the VM, or I'm just going to use DHCP. So all those features you set up as you're building the VM.
Now that's pretty cool.
So you need an ISO, something like Ubuntu Cloud, mm-hmm. something that's going to have this feature. But once you use the ISO, you build the VM essentially how you would any other VM. You set up what you want the CPUs to be, your RAM, just like you were building an Ubuntu VM.
Hmm.
But yeah, once you build the VM, you do not ever want to launch it. So that is right. one thing that'll mess you up and you'll have to start over is if you launch the VM, you're going to initialize all of those things. And then whenever you build a template out of it, it's no longer something that you can freely, you know, initialize on future VMs. So you build a VM, do not launch it. And then you set up all the defaults that we just described, and they're on this tab. If you're watching the video, I have the cloud init tab on Proxmox. Once you have all of that set up, then you right click on it and turn it into a template. Once you have it made as a template, you can right click on it and you can say build VM from template, and then it will deploy all of those features automatically.
That's awesome. I definitely have to try that.
And what I'm doing is, so I set up a pi hole, and right now the only thing using the pi hole is my desktop. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to use the pi hole as a DHCP server.
Okay.
But whenever I turned that feature on, it gave me a red warning that like, oh, if you do this, make sure that you have DHCP turned off on your router.
Yes. Yep.
Did you set that up on yours?
So yeah, basically you just go, as long as you don't have any other DHCP on your network running at the same time, you just go past that setting, that warning, and you're good.
So my situation, I think I'm in a bad spot to use pi-hole I want to use pi-hole only for the items that are on this network in this room. So the way my network is set up is I have the Ubiquiti router downstairs that connects to a access point upstairs. Mm-hmm. That access point plugs into a switch. That switch is all of my home lab stuff. Okay. So I want to use DHCP for everything on that switch. But my Ring doorbell, I don't want to use my pi hole for DHCP. You know what I mean?
You'd have to set up VLANs. I'm pretty sure you'd have to do that, unless there's a way that you can separate it with the Ubiquiti with your router, other than VLANs.
I think all this will come with a network upgrade that I do in the future, because I have the Ubiquiti Amplify or whatever. It's a commercial router. It's not like the
Unify
switches or anything like that. Yeah. So I think what I'll have to do is in the future, I want to upgrade those things. And so maybe then I'll be able to. But right now, I'm just using regular DHCP and not my pi hole as DHCP, except for on my desktop.
Yeah, because there's considerable thought process that needs to go into this before you just disable your other DHCP, because you got to make sure that everything is working off your pi hole, or else you're going to have all sorts of mayhem. Things won't connect. Things will have two IP addresses of the same IP. Trust me, I had all that happen to me.
you don't want any mayhem in your pi hole. Trust me. No mayhem in a pi hole. So right now what I'm doing is my pie hole is just being a pie hole for my desktop. It's just running. It's just doing the whole throwing ads into a black hole.
Yeah. Yeah.
But what I'm doing to set the IP address on my devices in my home lab for my VMs is I'm letting them get an IP address from the router. Mm-hmm. And then the router has a really nice app. I can actually just from my phone, I can see that a new device connected. Mm-hmm. And then I can either assign it a new static IP address.
Yeah.
Or I can just set up a DHCP lease for this MAC address, you know, for this address.
Yeah.
And so,
yep.
That's what I've done to keep from losing my IP addresses on my K3 cluster. Is
yeah, that's
I've
a
just,
good idea.
Every time I set up a new VM, I just go ahead and go in and give it a lease, a static lease. So that's what I'm doing for now.
That's pretty much how I do it the same way. I give everything a static lease inside Pi-hole. Same difference.
Yeah. Yeah, I want to have the control of using Pi-hole versus the... Because for it to be an Ubiquiti device... It is amazingly, I mean, if I compare it to like a Netgear device, I'm sure it's more customizable, but it's very, there's not a lot I can do other than, you know, basic home router
stuff.
Configurations. Yeah. Yeah. So I'm eventually going to want to upgrade. I've had this one now for a few years, basically since we moved in this house about 4 years. But yeah, so that's Cloud Init and how you can use it. I think it's going to be the way I build VMs from now on.
Oh, yeah,
for sure.
That sounds way easier than having to configure each one.
Yeah, some really cool things that you wouldn't think about. Like the SSH thing is a lifesaver. If I were able to use that DNS feature, that would be a lifesaver. I could see there's some really cool stuff that you can do with this. I have my cluster set up. I can see that they're running and they're all talking to each other, but I don't have anything installed. I don't have any, I don't have Rancher or any kind of, interface to manage the cluster. I don't have anything set up.
Gotcha.
I'm going to do all that this week. And that'll be the topic for next week.
Ooh.
Is how I went through the K3, setup process and, which is basically just, Jim's garage.
scripty.
Just his deployment. But then, I'll talk about what it does. I did look at the script and kind of get an idea for what it's doing so that we could talk about it on the show next week. So
yeah. That's the most important part is just going, as long as you understand what the script's doing, doesn't matter.
I'm excited about that. That's going to be really cool. I got to figure out some like really neat things to do on it, you know? One thing I know that I want to set up is a way to consolidate the various security cameras into one dashboard. I've seen a video of somebody that does that. Like if you have like Ring cameras along with like self-hosted cameras and be able to combine that into one dashboard.
That's nice. Yeah, that'd be really nice.
Yeah. So that'll be cool. Let's see. We did some gaming this week. Did you play any games this week?
Yeah. I played it's a short game, Unity based. It's called Oakwood, and it's like a dinosaur horror game.
I bought it because it was like $2.
Yeah, it was so cheap. I was like, I can't pass this up. It's dinosaurs. It's horror. Come on.
I installed it and I haven't played it. I haven't played it yet. But you said it was cool. You and I are both like big into Dino Crisis. Although it's funny, you like the second one and I like the first one. Isn't that the way it works out?
Yep.
And they're very different. They're very different.
Yes, they
People
are.
That have played the games know. So whatever you said, this was like a horror game with dinosaurs. I was immediately like, okay, let me take a look at this. And then when it was only $2, I was like, oh yeah, this is a no brainer. I'll buy it.
And the weird thing that had me kind of skeptical about it is there is no weapons.
Yeah.
You,
I kind of got that from the,
you literally have to just avoid these things. And like, if you get like in a situation where it's just like, there's no way out. There is no way out. There is no shoot your way out. You're just done.
Yeah. I think that there's a that has to do with the game that I'm going to talk about too. I think that there is a trend of that because of streaming.
Ah.
Because think about it. People that watch streamers play horror games, they want to see them panic and react. And those the games like that where you have to just run and hide. Hope. No crap, yeah. There he is. Oh, no. Yeah. Yeah. It makes for good streams. So I think it's genius. If you're an indie game developer, then it's actually a really good.
It's probably like
you
have
to think about. Yeah. I think that's something that people don't think about whenever developing a game.
Yeah.
Is how well does this game stream? You know? Because if it's highly streamable,
yeah,
then more people are going to see your game.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
So can you tell me anything about it without any spoilers or
Well, so basically what happens is you get invited to this camp called Oakwood. And
okay.
You kind of go there and you realize that there's something not quite right going on because there's no people around. And as you're going, you find out what happened slowly.
That became lunch.
I will preface this with it's definitely a Unity game, so you can't look at it through the lens of a AAA, you know, like Horizon Zero Dawn style game at all.
You know,
you got to look at this through the lens of Unity, and if you can get through that, the sound is great. The sound, the atmospheric sounds are great. The story is really solid. And the models are, I'd say they're pretty darn good. Like, they're not like, you know, Jurassic World, Evolution, the park builder. They're not like to that level good, but they're not like, they're not like stick figure dinosaurs. Let's say that.
Yeah. And the sort of the graphic style of the game is what I played the very opening of it, and it's first person.
Yep.
And it's not high fidelity, but it's also not like low poly models.
Right, you know exactly.
What I mean? Yeah.
It's that nice middle ground where, like, pretty much I think any PC could kind of play this game.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't want to ask too many things. I'm gonna play it pretty soon.
No.
I played a Unity.
I want to know. What are you gonna ask?
Oh, me? I was just gonna ask. Was it like super intense? Is there a lot of
There's points that it's super
jump scare
intense.
Moments there's, or anything like that.
I won't say any of that. But there, it's super intense at points. Like at points, you're just like you're hearing stuff, and you're like, what's that?
Yeah.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
What's going on?
So my plan for this episode, I put in the show notes almost 2 weeks ago because we kind of planned ahead a little bit.
Yeah.
I planned on talking about Silent Hill's short message, but waiting on on you to finish building your wife's computer so we could do the podcast, I played another game. And honestly, I'm kind of more excited about it than I am Silent Hill short message. But it's called Lake Haven Chrysalis. And it's a opening to what will be a full-length game. So it's like a 2 or 3, maybe 3 hour.
Yeah.
It's probably like a 2 hour game. It's not a long game at all.
About the same as Oakwood. Oakwood's about 2 hours.
Yeah. And it's similar to in price. I can't remember exactly, but it's not more than $5. I can't remember how much it is, but it's essentially a game that is for this developer to display the type of game they are making in a full-length game. Let me pull it up so I can say the name of the developer. I'll see what Oakwood is, too. Oakwood is developed by Breaking Dimensions. Lake Haven is by Encrypt Games, and if you go to Encrypt Games on their store page, this is the only game they have. It is $2.99, so it's $3.
Yeah, so that's not
bad. But, man, let me tell you, it is, for one thing, it is tank controls, which I have a mixed feeling about tank controls. You know, tank controls were great in the days of Resident Evil and Dino Crisis because it was a limitation that made it harder to run away from the dinosaurs in Dino Crisis.
Right, yep.
And that limitation made the game scary. You know what I mean? Like, that made it scarier. But I think modern gamers, they just see it as, oh, this game is bad because it's hard to control.
Right.
You know, so I kind of have a back and forth on it. I personally think that I like games that take advantage of tank controls. I'm working on a game, my game that I'm working on, will probably have tank controls. But it has tank controls. It has a fixed camera, which is something I feel very strongly about. Fixed camera needs to make a comeback in a big way. I love fixed camera.
And fixed camera can be perfect as long as it's done right.
Yeah. I like cinematic fixed camera. Yeah. I think that fixed camera adds like a voyeurism to the game. That's one thing I've heard is that one of the reasons why games like Resident Evil was so scary was also because it was like you had this voyeuristic view of the character.
Yeah.
It was like you were looking through someone else's eyes watching them, or like a security camera almost watching them.
But you kind of like can't do anything about it except for hope and pray that you're shooting in the right direction.
And then then games like Silent Hill took it to another level, and they made it cinematic.
Yeah.
It was not just... It's not just voyeuristic. It was also like you were watching a movie, like you're playing out a character in a movie. And this game takes advantage of all that, this Lake Haven game. And it's a really short game. You play as a Agent Cooper-esque detective that is like doing like a wellness call on this house. And when you get to the house, there is just all these puzzle pieces. And you carry a gun that you almost never use. There's like virtually no enemies in the game. But you have a gun, you can shoot it. But there's like when you finally get to use the gun, it is very like impactful and is like one of the best moments of the game. And I don't want to spoil it, but like it is just such a well-made game that is like just a complete love letter to that style, that genre of survival horror. I'm such a huge fan of. And it's funny that I just finished it. It's really short, very Twin Peaks-esque. If you're a fan of like Silent Hill, Twin Peaks, this game's made for you. It's way up that alley. And I actually recorded all my footage of the game, and I'm planning to do like a more in-depth video review just of the game.
Right.
You and I were talking about one of the extra content ideas I had for the show was if I play survival horror and review it.
Yeah.
Or even maybe stream it, but I don't know if I'm brave enough to stream it, so I might just play it and review it. This fits in there, and it's so juxtaposed that I played that before the episode where I'm supposed to talk about Silent Hill, a short message, because comparatively, Silent Hill: A Short Message steps so far away from that same feeling.
Interesting.
So Silent Hill: A Short Message it was released for free on the PlayStation Network.
Okay.
And so you have to have a PS5 to play it, but it doesn't cost anything, and it's really short. It took me maybe 4 hours to beat it. But I think I might have took longer than many people. Mm-hmm. I don't think it really takes that long. I got stuck in the chase scenes. There's a lot of chase scenes where, you know, a nemesis type creature is chasing you and you can't fight it. You have to run from it. And I died so many times trying to get away from this stupid thing. I did a list here of what I like and what I didn't like, and I'll talk about that first. So the monster in the game is called Cherry Blossom. And it's like this creature that's dressed like a teenage girl, but it's made of cherry blossoms.
Oh,
like these beautiful flowers are all coming out of her. But it has like this herky jerky move to it, almost like a camera that's only taken like maybe 15 frames per second.
Yep, yep.
And whenever she shows up, you just have to run from her. There's no attacking. If she catches up with you,
that's it.
You just get a death animation immediately. Yeah. And in the premise of the game, you're kind of Groundhog Day-ing it, where every time you die, you reverse back to before you got chased by her, and then you have to do it over again. So you're just constantly going, get killed by a cherry. But I thought it was a very Silent Hill feeling monster. The monster design was so good.
That's a good start then.
I loved it. That was a really cool thing. And another thing I liked was the look and feel of the environments of the game. So it felt, very specifically, it felt like the apartments in Silent Hill 2.
Okay.
The game takes place in an apartment building that is like, I think it's like an old Soviet apartment building or something, but it's some old apartment building that has been through all these different generations of time periods because it was like built and then closed down and then reestablished and then closed down. And then they were trying to reestablish it again. And then COVID happened. So COVID is like a big part of the game.
Oh, okay. So they actually incorporate that. Interesting.
Yeah. They incorporate it in a pretty big way. It's all in the, as you pick up scraps of paper and read about the history. But like COVID is the reason that it all shut down. They also talk about how people, they call it the Silent Hill phenomenon, where these people start feeling this like foggy days and like out of touch with reality.
Okay, yeah.
And they think it has to do with people being at home and disconnected from society during the lockdowns. And they call it the Silent Hill phenomenon because it's similar to this phenomenon that happened in this town, Silent Hill. And so that's their way of like tying COVID into the Silent Hill universe. And also, this game doesn't take place in the town of Silent Hill, which is not the first time we've seen that, but it's rare. It doesn't happen in the Silent Hill franchise. I know the only one I played was Silent Hill: The Room. Doesn't take place in Silent Hill, but it is within the scope of the universe that it doesn't have to be in the town of Silent Hill.
Right.
But I thought that the visuals were very Silent Hill-esque. In particular, there's a staircase scene in Silent Hill: A Short Message where a character is walking either up or down a set of stairs, and she's surrounded by sticky notes that all have her insecurities written on them. So what keeps happening in the game is the environment will get covered in all these sticky notes that will say ugly or useless, and it's this person's insecurities are all sticky noted on the wall.
Right.
And there's a scene in Silent Hill 2 where a character is walking up a staircase that and the whole thing is on fire. The whole environment is on fire. And she looks back at the main character who says something about like, you know, like, don't you see this fire or why are you going up the stairs? I can't remember what he says, but her response is, it's always like this. And it's one of the clues that in Silent Hill 2, at least, but I think in all Silent Hills, everyone is living their own like hell. Oh. They're living their own version of reality.
Yeah, yeah.
And this the staircase scene in Silent Hill, A Short Message, just cinematically reminded me of that Silent Hill 2 staircase scene. So that was another thing that I put a point in the column of like, I like this about the game. The storytelling, I thought that the storytelling in the Silent Hill, I heard people criticize it, but I actually think that it's better than people are giving it credit for. People are acting like it's too on the nose, like there's no sort of hidden meaning or anything, which is like a big thing in Silent Hill. I think that there is. I think there is. I've actually watched some videos on some fan theories on the A Short Message. And surprisingly, because I will agree that on the first time I played it, I really did kind of feel like, okay, well, what's different about this is that it's too on the nose. It's too
right.
It's too direct.
Right.
But there is some fan theories. There's some fan theories about an untold aspect of the game. I don't want to spoil it.
Yeah.
I just would say if you look that up on YouTube, there's some videos that kind of describe a few characters in the game and how they may not have been they may not have been exactly what they were represented as on the surface. There was more to them than that. And it's all told through, if you read all of the material in the game, there's clues all the way through the game that this could be an accurate fan theory. And I think that in today's modern gaming storytelling, I don't think that any game developer would develop a game and not make sure that the audience understood everything about the game. Whereas when Silent Hill 2 came out, they just expected you to be smart enough. They didn't, you know what I mean? Like they never explained.
There wasn't the hand holding that they have nowadays.
Yeah. And I think that people are getting the wrong idea about A Short Message because there is a little bit of that in the game explaining sort of plot A.
Yeah.
But then I think there's a B and C plot that is not handheld. And I think a lot of people are missing it. And because they're missing it, I think they think the game is shallow whenever it may be deeper than they realize.
I'm gonna throw out a hot take there. And yeah. I wonder if they're missing it because they're so used to these games now that do handhold you through.
Yeah, no, I think so. I think they are. And it also could be that the fan theory that I'm particularly talking about, which is basically, I don't want to spoil too much, but I'll just say like two characters could be one character.
Okay.
If you find that video and watch it, tell me what you think. But I think that it could be that maybe that was not in the intention of the game designers at all, and it's just coincidence that it fits. But the reason I think that there's some truth to it is because throughout the game, there's cut scenes that are live action actresses. Mm. In the game, there are three main characters, but there's only two actresses for the whole game for the live action cutscenes.
Okay.
But anyway, I've already said too much. I probably shouldn't have said all that. But yeah, so those were the aspects of the game that I enjoyed. I thought the story was good. Reading the journals of the three girls from the apartment complex is just like devastating. There's one particular, anybody that's played the game will know what I mean when I say the refrigerator scene. Mm. There's one particular just like completely like just pulls your soul out of your body. Like I had to stop playing, like, oh my gosh, like I can't believe that's the conclusion of this story. And I think that I don't know. I don't know that many games would tackle the subjects that are in this game so directly. I think that I almost think that because Silent Hill 2 came out in the time period that it came out in,
yeah,
and was able to talk about things like unaliving. I don't want to say the actual word because of YouTube, but like Silent Hill 2 came out in a time period where they talked about that kind of stuff, and video games were only for, especially a game like this, was only for a niche audience, and they could get away with it. Whereas if Silent Hill 2 were to come out today, I don't know that they could so directly tackle some of the subjects that are in Silent Hill 2.
Yeah.
And I almost think that a short message was their way of releasing something where they could test the waters.
Mm-hmm.
And the reactions I've seen has not been about their treatment of that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I think I don't know. I could be wrong, but that's my, like, I'm wondering if there's a possibility there that a short message is them sort of testing the water with the fans and with the non-fan public reaction.
I mean, if there's a way to do it, this is the way to do it, because it's a short game. It's
short game for free. Yep, yeah.
That is the best way.
So let me talk about the negative, because I do have a lot of negative. Actually, I have fewer negative points than I did positive points, but they're pretty big.
They're more weighted.
they're more weighted. So there's not a single puzzle or locked door in this entire game.
Oh, wow. That's weird.
That is more than weird. Yeah, that is like not a Silent Hill game.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, that's like the core mechanic to Silent Hill is solving puzzles and locking doors. The combat against the, like, radioactive figments of terror or whatever they are in Silent Hill, that is like secondary to the puzzles. Like the puzzles are the game. The combat was never the important part of Silent Hill. And not only that, there's no combat in this game. There's nothing to fight. There's nothing to kill. It's just whenever you encounter the cherry blossom, you just have to run from it. And I really enjoyed the cherry blossom scenes, but it wasn't Silent Hill. There's only like a few times where that kind of thing happens in Silent Hill. Mm-hmm. It's not like Resident Evil where you have the nemesis that you're running from all the time. Silent Hill has Pyramid Head, but like Pyramid Head only like sort of chases you in the way that Cherry Blossom does. Like maybe there's like one scene where you're running in a ever-changing hallway to get to an elevator. Mm-hmm. And that's like the only scene like that I can think of. Hmm. Whereas like this is like the only gameplay really is running from Cherry Blossom. Other than running from Cherry Blossom, you're basically playing a walking simulator where you're just walking through this maze and, you know, you're picking up things and like it's more
akin to one of those like QuickTime event games without the QuickTime events. So it's just like a movie. Yeah. You're basically kind of playing a movie.
Yeah. Well, there's some games that actually have been well received that are this type of game.
There's nothing wrong with it. No, I'm not trying to say anything like that.
Layers of Fear. Yeah. Layers of Fear is one. So Layers of Fear, if you play that game, you're on rails, basically. Like, you play the game, and you go through this, like, creepy house, mm-hmm. and as you turn corners, the hallway changes, and then you keep going. You know what I mean? Like, yep. it's a cool experience, but it's not a Silent Hill experience.
No, right,
you know, it's nothing like Silent Hill. This game was way more akin to Layers of Fear than it was to Silent Hill.
Okay.
There's no like backtracking. So like one thing that I always like about Resident Evil and survival horror games is you have to run back and forth through this mansion and you keep going back and do all these different
the 10th
places.
Time you could have see you could see something you missed all the other times. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Right. Yeah. There's none of that in this game because you're so on rails. Once you enter a room,
very linear.
If you go back to that same room again, you're actually not in the same room because the game engine has now built a new room with a new set of events. You know what I mean? Like, there's no true backtracking.
Ooh, that's weird.
That's the way games like Layers of Fear work. Like, whenever you open a door and you go into a room, and then I can't think of a good example, but the way they do that trickery where, like, you open a door and you're expecting a living room, and then you step into a rainforest. You know what I mean? Like, it's
right.
The way they do that trickery is by they're just building a new room every time.
Yes.
You know, it's not you're not right. truly remapping.
Right.
And this game, you know, does a lot of that. And there's no weapons. There's no scarcity.
How much of this do you think is because it's this quote unquote demo? Like, how much do you think the whole game, when they release the whole game, is going to be this way?
Yeah.
Or is it going to be just because this is a demo, that's why all of this is like this?
It's actually made by different studios.
So maybe I'm confused.
So Silent Hill 2 is being made by Bloober Team, I think.
Yeah.
And then this was made by some other team. I'm trying to see what the name of it is. But it's all released under Konami's brand, but it's not the same team. So I think this could be sort of like Konami testing the waters on certain things.
Okay.
As far as how fans receive it, and it's also putting Silent Hill back in the zeitgeist so that people are talking about it in preparation for.
Because
their big launch is going to be the Silent Hill 2 game. But I don't think that we can compare gameplay from one to the other because they're made by two completely different teams.
Okay.
I actually think that if this had been released, and I wrote out a conclusion. I don't know if it's better for me just to wing it or read this, but I actually think that if this had been released as an indie game, it was just called A Short Message, didn't have Silent Hill tacked onto the front of it, it would be much, much more well received than the way it is right now.
Yep.
The problem with this game is that it is married to the Silent Hill franchise,
and
it feels disjointed from, you know, from that, barely relating to it in any way. It doesn't take place in Silent Hill. None of the characters are connected to Silent Hill. The ending of the game, which I thought it was a good ending to the game, but it didn't feel like a Silent Hill ending. The story of the game was a good story. There's parts of it that feel like Silent Hill, but ultimately the whole like redoing your like the Groundhog Day thing where you're redoing this over and over again. That is like a fan theory element of Silent Hill that some people have raised, but it's never really been like this game kind of concretes that as if like now that's canon. You know what I mean?
Like that is what was happening the whole time. Yeah.
And it feels cheap that it's like built into this like, you know, free game that came out on the PlayStation Network.
Gotcha.
You know what I mean? I think that actually as a game release, this being attached to Silent Hill is a curse. I think this is what puts all the scrutiny on this game.
Gotcha.
But if it had been released even for free and it didn't have Silent Hill in the title, would people even be talking about it, you know?
Yep.
So maybe it's a blessing and a curse.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. The way you're making it sound, it's definitely a blessing and a curse because it doesn't sound like a Silent Hill game to me. And I'm not like a huge, like, diehard Silent Hill fan, but I even know that it doesn't seem like one.
I think that it's getting some undeserved hate. Like, people talk about it like this is an awful game. I think it's a good game. but because, it just does. It's just not a Silent Hill game.
It's what you said. It's because they're looking at it through the eyes of Silent Hill, and you can't do that because this is not a full featured game in the first place. You know?
Yep. That's exactly how I feel about it. And it's a shame. I don't think this holds any weight on what the Silent Hill 2 remake is going to be like.
Yeah.
I don't think it has.
That's kind of what I was asking before, because I feel like this is a product of the fact that it is, like you said, different studio, and it's shorter game, and just testing the waters, basically. So
it might have been that this was supposed to be a bigger game, and they were actually going to charge for it. And then they decided that they release it for free, and they keep it this a short message.
Yeah, that could be, too. I've heard of that kind of thing happening.
Yeah. But there was some there has been, maybe we'll save this for next episode, there has been some discussion about some negative signs towards the Silent Hill 2 remake, because there was a combat trailer that came out. There was a puzzle trailer that came out that everybody loved, because it was like, it was literally like you were looking at the original game, but like with better graphics and, you know, with a new engine. And then the combat trailer came out, and it was like you were watching Resident Evil 3 remake.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, this is like, I like Resident Evil 3, but that's, again, it's just not the same game. It's just Silent Hill 2 is not supposed to be focused on combat. It's not supposed to be being attacked by swarms of zombies and throwing grenades and shit like that. So there's some negative feelings, but from what I understand, the Bloober team said that that trailer was made like way early in the,
development,
in the development cycle, and that that it doesn't really accurately represent. And also, Bloober team is saying that they have no part of the promotional material. That's all Konami.
Oh, okay.
And that they don't think that that trailer accurately represents what they've developed. So
interesting.
I don't know. We just have to see. There's no talent, you know. We'll just have to see. It could be that it. I mean, it's obvious that they saw the amount of money that the Resident Evil remakes made.
Yeah. Oh,
and that's why they said, oh, well, we got this other, you know, we got this other brand we could do.
They got the dollar sign eyeballs going.
Yeah. That, I mean, that has to be an element. No doubt. But for now, if you want to play a great version of Silent Hill, get Silent Hill 2 Enhanced Edition. You can go to their website and download the Enhanced Edition. You have to have a copy of the game. And I'm not going to tell you how to get a copy of the game, but everybody listening to this podcast can figure out how to get a copy of the game. And then what I will say is that no matter how you acquired a copy of the game, if you install Enhanced Edition, it will run the game. So just take that information however you take it.
Interesting.
And that's a great way to play the game. The Enhanced Edition is actually really good. All right. Well, I think we're flashing red up at the top of the recording. We may be hitting our recording limit.
Oh, boy.
So I think we should say thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week. Peace.
See ya.